Welcome to Season 4 of the Fight Science Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Sullivan. In this series, we are speaking to some of the most innovative minds in the world of sports nutrition. We'll be discussing everything from research, practice, and performance to give you an inside look into the exciting world of combat sports performance. Today, my guest is Charles Stuhl. Charles is a registered sports dietitian who has an undergraduate degree in biochemistry and molecular biology and a master's degree from UCLA in nutrition science. He is the current performance nutrition manager at the UFC Performance Institute, Las Vegas. Charles is one of the unsung heroes in the campaign of changing the negative culture behind making weight. Alongside all of his great work that he does in Las Vegas, Charles has been a pioneer in the revolutionary fight week service provided by the UFC and Trifecta in the week leading up to an event. This partnership set out a mission to provide UFC athletes with high-quality performance nutrition during fight week to ensure that the athletes on the roster are making weight and doing it in the most scientifically backed manner. In this episode, Charles and I discuss the development of this service and discuss the science that drives it. This is a fantastic episode that demonstrates the evolution of MMA as a sport through the application of good science. There's a lot of great info to get through, so let's get to it. All right, green light means we're live, so back recording for another episode of the Fight Science Podcast. Now joined by a very special guest. Now, Charles, I'm probably going to butcher your last name. Charles Stuhl, is that right, Charles Stuhl?
Oh, you got it right.
I got it right. Stuhl,
yeah.
And I was going to say, I probably got it wrong 20 other times in the past. But for those of you at home who do not know, Charles is the performance nutrition manager at the UFC PI Las Vegas. Charles, before we get into anything else, how did you come about? How did you get into that role at the UFC PI?
So prior to being brought on to the PI in Vegas, I was actually the sports dietitian at UCLA for their athletics program. Honestly, I've been competing in kickboxing and Muay Thai since I was 16, so I was pretty familiar with the, at least what I perceived was the correct way to make weight at the time. And through trial and error, I've kind of exposed myself to that world. And then eventually Clint and I met up at the CPSDA conference, and we bonded over a metabolic cart, and the rest is history.
That's so funny. And how you found that experience in kickboxing and Muay Thai? Have you found that helped a lot when it came to working with the athletes and coming in because you did have that hands-on approach?
Absolutely. I think to really be successful, especially working with such a niche population in combat sports, having lived it, breathed it, and experienced the mental aspect, the training aspect, and really the emotional roller coaster that's being in camp, being in fight week, making weight, rehydrating, and fighting and being your best. It takes a lot of time to learn it, especially if you've never experienced it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's what I want to deep dive in with you, Charles, is the service that the UFC PI offer these fighters. And like we were talking about offline, you guys have been doing this for about 18 months. And for anyone at home who isn't familiar, it's an absolutely incredible service that you guys do, where fighters will come in from all over the world, all UFC fighters, and yourself, Chef Mario, Alexa, Clint, we'll take them in, and then you'll complete their fight week strategies to make sure that they're making this weight safely, making sure they're eating good food. Let's deep dive and let's go into this. Let's talk about how this program all started. How did it come to be?
So this actually came about when the UFC partnered with Trifecta, which is a meal prep delivery service within the United States. And Clint actually collaborated with them and help them onboard Mario, who is now their executive chef. And what initially started as sort of kind of testing the waters and a very conservative approach to how we can support athletes over fight week, it's just evolved into what's now considered, especially during these COVID times, as an essential component of UFC fight week services. We grew from when we were supporting maybe three or four athletes to now supporting pretty much the whole card with food, rehydration, and of course carbohydrates to prepare them post weigh-in for their fights.
Yeah, so let's go through the process, because this has always blown my mind, because as we were talking about offline, the athletes I work with them all year round. If we do a camp together, we have 8 weeks together. And in that time, you get to know their metabolism really well. You get to know how they respond to certain foods. And when you come to that fight week, you have all this data to lean back on, and you prepare this fight week strategy weeks, if not months in advance. And, you know, constantly change it. And then when you get there, you know what you're facing. But it's always amazed me, you guys don't necessarily have that. And you guys have these guys rock up, yet you guys still manage to get them on weight. They're still eating good food. They're still eating a lot of food. Talk us through this process. How do you go? When this fight week starts, how's all this start?
So first and foremost, over fight week, it's been a long learning process. I was just looking back at some of the notes, and it's since the myself alone, I've supported over 400 fights and athletes in their fight weeks, right? Since this program started, and I can only, it continues to evolve, like it continues to get better. My role is both dietitian, but also working in a sense food service and logistics and operation. Whatever nutritional strategies I'm advocating for or pushing for or educating on, if I don't have the product on hand, if I'm recommending X amount of water, but I don't have water around, I'm setting an athlete up for failure. So first and foremost, I'm trying to keep an athlete as nourished as possible through the weight making process. So the first thing I have to do is to understand the myriad of objective information that I need to collect from said athlete. And that all begins at the check-ins. So athletes typically will arrive in on a Tuesday. They'll say, oh, the ops team will say, hey, go talk to Charles if you want food. And immediately their eyes open and they say, ah, food, awesome. Come sit with me. And that's where the real work begins. So beyond food allergies, intolerances, which I have to collect, obviously, I start with the bare bones basics. First off, what are their weight cutting tactics and preferences? Because I may have never interacted with this athlete before. Especially during these COVID times, some of the weight cut modalities that athletes are typically used to using may not be accessible to them. An athlete may only have ever cut weight using a sauna that they've just so happened to find wherever they're traveling and fighting. Unfortunately, when you're confined to a hotel that may or may not have a bathtub that's big enough for you, and you only have a portable sauna, you best at least experiment over fight week and try out these different modalities that may be unfamiliar to you. So I just make sure the athletes are aware of what weight cut modalities are available to them, as well as get to know what they typically do. And the next is what sort of resources they need. Sweet, sweat, thermal blankets, anything to make the process a little easier. I'll make sure we get it to you, so to speak. Then it really becomes the nutritional status, and that's the real challenge, right? Because one athlete may come in totally nourished, still glycogen repleted and ready to rock and roll, only 6% over. And another athlete might be starved for the last 8 weeks. He comes in at 6% over, but that's a completely different athlete. And their response to our programming is going to be completely different. So I'm asking them what their water intake strategy is, for instance. So some athletes will always advocate for staying as nourished and hydrated as possible through fight week. I'm rarely advocating for anything other than that. But of course, we get the odd athlete that wants to do a water taper. And okay, understanding what their protocol for what they deem is a water taper is important, because I also have to rehydrate you. If I'm asking you for your body mass on a Thursday morning and using that to program your rehydration, but you did a water taper, you're only 3% over on Thursday, you're not going to get the amount of electrolytes and fluid volume to fully rehydrate, right? So these are all the intricate questions we're trying to ask. How much water have you been drinking the last 2 weeks? When did you restrict carbohydrates and if you have at all, When did you restrict fiber intake, if at all? So these are all the questions that I'm trying to understand to comprehend an athlete that I may have never interacted before with.
It's absolutely phenomenal, hey? And if people at home listening haven't really worked, or they're not practitioners, or they haven't done this themselves as athletes, it's really mind-blowing. And for me, as a practitioner who does this as his full-time job, hearing you talk about this, Charles, it does it. It's like I almost smirk and just in disbelief about how you guys pull this off. And every time I've seen you guys there, it's always this manic thing. And I'm only ever there with like one or two or three, maybe four athletes. And then you guys have like 20 other athletes that you're doing this with. And you're going through and you're pulling off all these strategies. But I think the most important thing is exactly that. You pull it off. You guys do this. And it's through this assessment. Can you guys talk through, you're just talking then about a couple of the strategies you do use with these athletes. What are the fight week strategies you guys like to utilize for the fight week?
So we're trying to help the athletes lose what we call non-essential body mass. And if your listeners haven't heard Dr. Reed's podcast, I highly recommend that they should. He's going to highlight all these points in much better detail than I am. But essentially, we say that there are three components for non-essential body mass: fiber, muscle glycogen, and then the sodium water, the water retention component of the human body. So our nutrition programming, if an athlete needs it, obviously if it's a heavyweight or if it's someone who's only 2% over, we can be a lot more liberal with carbohydrates, fiber, and whatnot. And that's where that individualized component comes into play. But essentially, we're stripping the body of muscle glycogen, and then we're also doing a low residue diet, so to speak. So primarily, it's fats and proteins to meet resting metabolic rate energy needs. And of course, if an athlete is absolutely starved and has told me that, I've been eating nothing but, you know, boiled egg whites and BCAAs for the last 3 weeks, well, if I went with his RMR, he might even put on weight, you know? So that's where that nutrition check-in survey is so critical for understanding an athlete's state of nourishment.
And is that the approach that you're going for, Charles, is that you do want to feed them a decent amount and you're aiming to get them at their RMR?
So RMR is a good place to shoot for, as well as 1 gram per pound of body mass of protein, ideally. But then again, there are situations where an athlete can't afford to, we call it our protein sparing, basically the most depressing food program we can possibly provide, where we're giving sub-leucine threshold protein doses per meal. It's pretty depressing to have to put someone on that, but sometimes it's necessary. Even 3 days of potential muscle thinning is necessary to help them get within a certain point over their weight class.
Let's dive into that a bit, Charles. And like you said, you guys are onboarding these guys. And this is something that blows my mind all the time, is that at least if I have an athlete that's coming in and say they're a red zoner and they're like 10 to 12% over, I understand their body. I've worked with them. I know, probably done multiple fight camps with them. And I understand that what their body will do when I put them through certain strategies. So I can be pretty comfortable in that 10 to 12% over. For you guys, again, like you said, you don't know. You don't necessarily know. What are the strategies you're using if these guys are coming in and they're quite heavy? How are you taking them through that process? You mentioned the protein spare. Is there anything else that you're going through with them?
Sure. So I would need to also understand what potential reasons why they might be 10 or 12% over. Did they travel, right? Is there sleep disruption that's plays into a part of this? If it's a female athlete, I also have to understand their menstrual cycle. Perhaps they're just coming off of the luteal phase, or they're just finishing their period, and that's why they're retaining some water. And I can, fingers crossed, hope that with the dietary strategies that we're implementing, that they'll be within a safe percentage over for their weight cut. for an athlete that comes in, let's say 10-12% over, if they're already glycogen depleted, if they have been water loading for a prolonged period of time, which I can go into a little bit off after this about some of the issues that I potentially see in doing that. But if they're really compromised nutritionally, we have to be very conservative about their protein and fat intake. And honestly, as we mentioned, the protein sparing programming comes into play, which is like a sub-leucine threshold feeding.
Yeah, and let's go with that. Let's go through the issues with that. Say, because it's common, and you'd know, you'd seen it 100 times, you've seen it 1,000 times, that athletes come in and they start this weight cutting process almost 2 to 3 weeks out, where they're cutting carbohydrates, they might be increasing their water, they might have even cut salt, they might have started completing all these fight week strategies 2-3 fight weeks ago that weren't really fight weeks leading into the fight week. What's the problem with doing that, Charles?
So just from experience with hearing it time and time again, athletes always say, hey, I've been eating super clean. So that automatically means to me, you know, tons of fiber, which is actually a good thing, because at least that means there's some non-essential body mass to pull from. But it oftentimes is super bland, unseasoned, chronic electrolyte depleted athlete. And I mean, obviously, until there is a randomized control study done with the effects of water loading for 3 weeks versus 1 week, et cetera, I can't say for certain. But there has been some research, Luther et al. Published a paper in 2011 showing that, you know, chronic sodium depletion actually raises aldosterone. So you actually get water retention from chronic electrolyte depletion, as well as it blunts insulin sensitivity. So your GLUT4 translocation is blunted. So essentially, anytime an athlete is restrictive in replacing electrolyte intake leading into fight week for a prolonged period of time, that is in of itself a risk factor that I have to take into account over fight week.
Like, what amounts are we talking, Charles? Is that saying put 4 or 5 tablespoons of sodium or salt on your food, or is it just actively not cutting out the sodium from your food leading into it, all the other essential electrolytes?
Generously seasoning meals and also being proactive in replacing electrolyte needs from training, electrolyte losses from training. We've all seen the case studies of the 7 grams of sodium losses per day in some athletes that are big lads that are training hard. And when you're chronically under intaking your electrolytes, you're going to create a deficiency.
Can we go into that a bit, Charles? Because this is something, and this is kind of veering a little bit away from this discussion around fight week, but I think this is important because this is probably one area of combat sports nutrition or combat sports science that I have noticed over the last few years that really doesn't get touched or really doesn't get talked about, or there isn't much offering around there. I think in terms of supplements, or there's always the proteins and the BCAAs and things like this, but we never really focus on this electrolyte loss or fluid loss in training from these athletes. And they have, like you said, they could be losing remarkable amounts of fluid. And I think the comparison is always, oh, well, it's not endurance sports. And it's like, yeah, but if you say in Vegas or in Australia in summer or even around that time of year, and you train for, you know, hour and a half, 2 hours, which is not uncommon for these athletes, you lose a phenomenal amount of fluid and electrolytes. And what you're saying is that can be detrimental to performance later down if you're not replacing those fluids and electrolytes adequately.
Absolutely. So you're from a recovery standpoint, from a performance standpoint, from a weight descent standpoint, chronic electrolyte depletion is a very, I would say, easily targetable nutrition intervention that athletes can undergo. It just so happens that unlike every other sport where we're continually aggressively trying to see any way we can increase sodium intake or electrolyte intake, combat athletes tend to avoid it. And there is a short term, at least on the scale, when an athlete sweats a bunch, doesn't replace fluids and drinks a ton of doesn't replace electrolytes and drinks a ton of fluid, they're essentially doing a mini water load over fight camp, and it looks great on the scale. Like, man, I just floated 4 pounds. That's great. I'm ahead of my weight descent plan. I'm doing great. So, and that's where there's this short-term benefit, at least in their mind. But what you're doing is you're setting yourself up for a more challenging cut down the road over fight week.
And let's follow this logic, Charles. And let's talk about, again, that's if you're doing the fluid and the electrolytes and you're quite literally doing these mini cuts, and that could set you up for a really tough fight week. That can also happen, say, if these guys say, well, I want to lose a bit of weight pretty fast, so I'll cut carbohydrates coming into that. Can you talk to us about that as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, beyond just the weight descent, chronic carbohydrate depletion from neurotransmitters, from recovery, sleep, even your athletic performance, you don't want to develop the adaptations of chronic carbohydrate depletion through your camp. You don't want your glycolytic enzymes and processes to all get downregulated from a chronic like weight loss camp. Ideally, you want to be strategic with if you can't afford to be carved up all the time, at least be strategic about when we're providing a dose of carbohydrate pre-training. You want to create the adaptations that set you up for success, for a successful fight.
So Charles, let's say, and we'll go back and we'll talk more about the fight week, but let's say in an ideal world, say Charles, ideal athlete, that say if you could get them and throw this info out to them and say, before you come into your UFC fight week and you come and sit down and do the onboarding process with me, I want you to do X, Y, and Z, what would you say to them?
Well, first and foremost, like if we have to take into consideration the culture and historical norms of a UFC or of a combat athlete. Reed's athletes in China typically come in 10% over. But don't remember that they're like chronic carb eaters, right? They got a lot of muscle glycogen, right? The rice, noodles, everything. So he knows that when they come in at 10%, they have a lot of non-essential body mass to lose. Ideally for us, our recommendation is coming into fight week, not water loaded, at 6 to 8% over, hydrated, nourished. That gives you a lot of leeway for pulling some muscle glycogen. No one's ever fully muscle glycogen loaded through a fight camp, right? Mm-hmm. But still fiber to lose and not depleted of electrolytes. 6 to 8%. That would be fantastic.
That'd make my job a lot easier.
Yeah, wouldn't it? And as we kind of touched on this when we were talking offline, but the kind of the next hot topic is the heat acclimation piece. So exposing the body and preparing the body for the work that it needs to put in over fight week can be proactively done in the weeks leading up to fight week. And especially during COVID times where there is limited access to saunas and even training camps are not going ideally, heat acclimation is something that's so easily done within the comfort of one's own home or having a little portable sauna in your gym or garage, as many of the cases are right now. It's something so actionable that one can actually do. On the flip side, I would say I have a feeling that since heat acclimation is the new hot topic, I want to say that replacing electrolytes from the sweat losses of basically an additional training session are going to be also important to take into account.
Yeah, absolutely. And I smile at you talk about it because if anyone here is following me on Instagram, I'm all about heat acclimation lately, just purely for this reason, because it just makes sense, right? And we've had Dr. Oliver Bali on a couple of times who's done the original paper that was it. And it's something he always says, right? It's like, you wouldn't go through a training session not drinking any water or not replacing electrolytes So, and you need to think about your heat acclimation training, not as a mini weight cut, but as training. You're literally training your body just to be better. So go in there. And that's what his study said. His study shows that you can go in there and get the exact same heat acclimation results by going in there and drinking room temperature water. So if anyone here is listening, and this is the 100th time you've heard myself talk about heat acclimation, you've heard Charles say it, and now you go, finally, I'm going to try it. Make sure you take your water bottle in with you, keep it room temperature, and sip it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And Charles, so let's go back to this fight week strategy. So these guys have come in, ideally, they're fiber loaded. They've had, you know, lots of good veggies leading into this. So there's that non-essential mass to lose. Ideally, they've had a good amount of carbohydrates coming in. So they're fully plumped up with glycogen in their muscles and their livers. They haven't started their water loading process. Let's dive into that, because obviously Dr. Reed Real is the guy when it comes to water loading. And it is a bit of this discussion of, oh, do we need to do it? Do we not need to do it? What is your guys' recommendations when you onboard these athletes when it comes to, hey, this is how much fluid you should be taking in? Hey guys, quick interruption here, but well worth it. You guys know that I work with a lot of fighters at world-renowned City Kickboxing. And if you've ever been to CKB, you'll notice that almost all the fighters are wearing Engage fight wear. I'm talking everyone. They're all wearing Engage gloves, shinies, headgear, shirts, shorts, and even slides. When I say everyone, I'm talking guys like middleweight champ Israel Adesanya, featherweight champ Alexander Volkanovski, lightweight champ to be Dan Hangman Hooker, Kai Kara France, Brad Riddell, and Shane Young. They're all wearing Engage, and they're all wearing it because the gear is not like any other fight gear you would have used before. The gear is custom made with top quality material and is by far the most stylish gear you'll see on the mats. So you can see for yourself, Engage has sorted my listeners out with a 10% discount code. All you need to do is apply TFD10 on checkout so you can see why everyone is repping Engage. All right, back to the show.
So as I mentioned, first and foremost, I like to get an idea of whether or not they do a water load. They typically fall under three tiers, I'd say. The water taper, which I will just nod my head. what they consider is like basal water intake. Like I just stick to my, you know, one and a half gallons per day. And then the athletes that proactively, quote unquote, water load. So those who want to proactively water load, we do a pretty easy calculation where it's individualized to their body mass. So there's a factor that we times their body mass by, and it spits out a fluid volume that we recommend them have. And that might be 1.55 times their body mass for Tuesday, Wednesday, and then 1.88 Monday, Tuesday, and then 1.88 times their body mass on Wednesday. So essentially, we're flooding the body with fluids, and as Reed would say, you're upregulating your aquaporins, your urine output is going crazy, and you're setting your body up for a successful weight cut.
Yeah, absolutely. And is that in gallons or liters there, Charles, the 1.5 and the 1.8?
So that would actually do fluid ounces. Okay, that's why the number you may have played around with there might say 200 something.
Yeah.
A lot of liters. So that's in fluid ounces. And each athlete will get their own program that'll spit it out in both liters and gallons, you know, for... We're a global company, as we say.
Yeah, yeah. So for everyone at home who just did that quick maths, make sure you put that back into milliliters and then back into liters. So do the conversion. All right, Charles. So that's what you guys are monitoring this every day. And you've got Chef Mario who's in the kitchen. And this is the beauty of this program, which is absolutely phenomenal. And you guys have saved my butt too many times to count. Too many times to count where you guys have... Chef Mario and yourself has really helped me when I've been traveling and we've been really busy and flat out. The communication between yourself, you get all this information, and this is the beauty. You pass this to Chef Mario, who's in this huge kitchen, has all this wonderful fresh ingredients available, and then he turns us all into meals, and you guys get that to these athletes for three meals a day, two snacks. Is that correct?
Typically three meals, two snacks. If an athlete... can afford to have four meals? Sure, it's four meals. That all is variable on athlete to athlete. But absolutely, I basically we have something what we call a kitchen order form, which we used, you know, diabetic food exchanges and whatnot. And I give Mario a bunch of numbers, and he turns these numbers into, you know, delicious, nutritious food over 5 weeks. I think it's the most, I think it's a beautiful form of collaboration. Yeah, absolutely.
How often are you and Mario communicating with this? How much are you guys talking and changing these numbers depending on what the athlete's doing?
So obviously check-in survey, initial program, day by day, that thing is going to be changing. Oftentimes we get it right, but there are situations where we need to be more liberal with food servings, or we have to be more conservative. If you could only see our text chain going back and forth over 5 weeks, lucky we have an unlimited text plan. So that would be expensive.
Amazing. Yeah. And you're checking in with the athletes every single morning. Is that right? Is it you're collecting the data and then adjusting this information on your end, and then you're also giving it to Mario. Is that right?
Correct. And I would say once a day is the bare bones, communication between the athletes. I really like to check in as well, pre-training, post-training, as many checkpoints as possible through the day.
And let's talk about that, Charles, because obviously during this fight week, these guys are getting ready to fight. So they're still training. They're doing their 3x5 rounds or their 5x5, whatever they're doing. How do you guys factor in that into their nutrition plan? And how do you guys approach the training? What are you guys doing nutritionally to help them through that week for their training?
Absolutely. So another component of the check-in survey is just to ask them how their camp was. So funnily enough, I noticed that at the very start of when we were having cards during this COVID time, a lot of athletes were checking in quite close to their weight class, like 6%. And I thought, huh, how peculiar. It's the result of having a 3-4 month fight camp where fights were continually being rebooked and guys just stayed ready. Their challenge was overtraining, sleep dysregulation, right? And now that those fights have passed, it's the abbreviated fight camps where an athlete may or may not be fighting at a weight class above. Where they say, hey, like over fight week, I'm still training hard because I got to get at least 4 weeks of training in before I fight. So, you know, I may be in a position where I can still be liberal with carbohydrates to fuel those higher intensity training sessions. On the flip side, I may have an athlete that's just said, you know, I'm just flowing, I'm just doing drills. So I try and get an RPE and understanding of their training intensity as well as their nutritional needs to support that training session. Our go-to is to provide a slow-release carbohydrate called UCAN. Just to provide enough exogenous carbohydrates to fuel them through the training session so it's not completely fat-fueled. But also not enough carbohydrate where I'm restoring muscle glycogen.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's 3 points I want to come back and touch on, Charles. And I want to do this just purely to highlight how crazy it is what you guys do. And you mentioned these before, and that's the travel, sleep, and if they're a female, what's going on physiologically for them. Can you talk to us, say, obviously for the UFC, you've got not all your athletes are always going to be local fighters coming to the card. So a lot of them are traveling. What effect does that travel have when they're coming in for the check-in? What does it have on their body, and how do you adjust for it for these fight weeks?
Sure. So let's say we have oftentimes someone flying in from Brazil. That's a brutal 16, 20-hour flight. Food access during that time. I need to first and foremost figure out what that guy ate during the flight over. And oftentimes it's Subway. And as you and I both know, Subway is high in sodium and high in carbs. So if that person checked in at 10% and I know that that's what's causing it, if anything, that's more of a positive, because I know there's some water retention from that trip, as well as sleep and recovery. You know, we're partnered with Thorne, a third-party NSF certified supplement company, and we can provide melatonin or Recovery Pro, which contains GABA, things that can help stimulate that parasympathetic nervous system and help them sleep and recover and help their time zone shift to the appropriate time zone for wherever they're fighting. So these are all the questions I have to ask and have everything on deck for them.
What importance, Charles, is sleep when we're talking about the weight making process? Why is it so important these athletes are getting a good night's sleep?
So the weight that one quote unquote floats is highly, at least from my experience with what I've seen, is tied in heavily to sleep and recovery. The worst thing you could possibly do is to go into a Thursday night sleep deprived, where, I mean, most athletes who cut Thursday wake up Friday morning don't really sleep at all between Thursday and Friday, right? Because they're dehydrated, they're in no position to sleep, and then they have to fight the very next day. So sleeping as much as possible over fight week, even though you're traveling and sleep cycles might be disrupted, is incredibly important, not only for the weight making, but also for fight readiness, so to speak.
Yeah. Let's just touch on that for a little bit, that term float, just for the guys listening, Charles. What does that mean? What does it mean to float weight?
Well, when we say float, let's say you go to bed at 168 pounds and you wake up at 165. Those three pounds that are from sweat losses, the when you breathe, you expire fluids. You also, when you urinate or when you defecate, etc. These are all the mass that one shifts through the evening. The more undisrupted and long that sleep can be, the more of that non-essential body mass, the more of that float we get.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure, I'll ask you, Charles, that floating period, because this is something that I don't think you could even Google what floating is or and get an answer of what it is to float weight. But you would have experience with this, that some athletes, if they do this correctly, float astronomical numbers overnight. And that is almost structured into their fight week protocol. What are some of the larger numbers or percent body weight that you've seen that athletes float overnight?
Oh, so someone can float easily 3% of their body mass, especially when they're water loaded. Yeah, I mean, 3%, or that can be 6 pounds for some. I mean, it can be quite a lot of body mass through the evening.
And that's, again, coming back to the importance of that sleep period, because that's often something that athletes may not be thinking about. Like you said, it's a big fight. They're getting nervous. They've got training. They've got whatever. They may not be sleeping, but by pure fact of getting a good night's sleep, you could potentially be floating that non-essential mass.
Yeah, and you actually bring up a really good point, and something that I think right now might be the next, who knows, it may be the next big thing in fight week readiness, but the psychology and psychological component of it. I can't help but notice, but for those who even have a challenging cut, when they approach fight week with a positive mentality and confidence, positivity, but also the ability to cope, have successful coping measures for stress, because let's be honest, fight week is incredibly stressful. Those who have those core components tend to have an easier fight week. And even when it comes to being uncomfortable in the tub or during the acute weight cut process, I can't help but notice that those that have challenges during their acute weight cut are those that are typically in a manic chest breathing state. Simply understanding how to calm oneself down during those processes, I think that can be a huge component of quote unquote fight week readiness. I can only imagine that would be incredibly helpful down the road.
Yeah, I agree. And I think for those listening at home, me and Charles are kind of putting on our theoretical hats here because, again, you're not going to Google this and find this. But again, I completely agree. And this is something that I've discussed with Clint in depth, where I've got an athlete in particular who just seems to be so in tune with their body. And despite the numbers and as much maths as I want to do on the paper, he will always seem to pick the weight that he wakes up with each day of fight week, no matter what I do, even if I try to sabotage him and put more sodium in his food. Again, because of this, he'll tell me every day, he'll say, look, I know my body, I'm going to wake up at X weight. And I know this sounds crazy. And again, like we're saying, we've got our theoretical hat on, but I really put that down to modulating stress and that mental aspect. And he knows how much, you know, sleep to get to float X amount of weight. And if I bring this much water, I'll urinate this. And maybe he does it subconsciously, maybe he doesn't. But like you said, it maybe this is the new frontier when it comes to this fight week, is somehow managing this mental side of it to get these advantageous effects.
Absolutely. And that's just another proactive thing that one can do leading up to fight week, just like a heat acclimation.
Yeah. And Charles, let's touch on this and let's talk about it in whatever depth that you can talk about this acute weight loss period. And everyone that follows MMA goes through it. We go through these fight week strategies purely for the point that we want to minimize the amount of water that these guys have to, quote unquote, water cut or weight cut. And when we talk about weight cutting, this is what most people think of, is sitting in a sauna or sitting in a bath. And at least in my opinion, I think this is the most high-risk activity that these athletes can be doing. How are you guys during this process? How are you advising the athletes around this water cut? What are you recommending? What are you saying to these guys?
So first and foremost, I think when we initially started, when we had a much smaller athlete engagement population, we could be a lot more hands-on with the acute weight loss aspect. But as the program's grown, now we're just one of us is servicing 20 plus athletes. We really want to take a step back from being the quote unquote weight cut coach. So on the flip side, you know, given our experience and whatnot, there are situations where we may or may not have to step in and at least provide some advice on changing modalities. Recently, we had an athlete that historically has always been able to cut weight using physical activity, you know, slap on a sauna suit and go for a run. This particular fight week, the athlete came in heavier than normal. Travel restrictions, COVID, you name it. There's a lot of things that can make things more challenging. And it came to the point where this athlete had been on the treadmill for 2 hours between jogging and walking, just absolutely fatigued, and simply wasn't sweating anymore. And that's where we had to come in and say, hey, you got to switch modalities, because right now you're just fatiguing yourself. Talk about, you know, someone running 12 miles the day before weigh-ins, and then one day before your fight, you're not setting yourself up for fight readiness. And that's a situation where we say, hey, look what you got available to you. You have a sauna right there. You have a portable sauna right here. Here are some tried protocols for how long to be in, how long to do your mummy or whatever. Here's your assigned weight cut coach out of your team. He'll communicate with me. We got your back. That's just the general approach that we have for the acute weight cut process.
Is there anything, Charles, like, I know this is really tough and it's really tough to say because it's so individualized and it depends on so many other factors leading up to that point. But is there any numbers, say percent body wise, that you guys advise athletes around when it comes to that acute weight loss period, that, hey, we want you to not be doing more than X percent of your body weight? Or do you guys recommend anything around that?
If an athlete followed a water load protocol, so I'll be specific, followed a water load protocol and is starting their day on weight cut day 6% over, I think that's definitely a positive. don't get me wrong, things can always go wrong. It's one of the most stressful days of the week. Not much sleep, you know how it is. but I would say that them having to cut anything less than 6%, you're looking pretty golden. When you're talking about 8% and then 10%, that's when things are more likely to go wrong. I mean, regardless, 10% of body mass to cut when you're, that's a lot of fluid to shift in one evening. At the very least, that person is going to have a compromised sleep schedule. That's for certain. It's hard to say, but I'd say if you're looking 4 to 6%, you're in a pretty good spot.
Yeah, absolutely. And Charles, let's segue that. That's a good segue into this post weigh-in period, because obviously you got to put back in what you took out. And absolutely, I guess this is the beauty of this program, is that once you've taken them through, you've got all the numbers on these guys, you know exactly what you're feeding them. You probably have a very good idea of how much fluid they had to lose and can get a pretty good guesstimate of the electrolytes that came out. How do you guys go about this? How do you guys go about the post weigh-in period?
Sure. And I think, as Reed would say, there's many ways to skin a cat. I don't think there's any true perfect way to do it. At the end of the day, we're trying to replace what we predict are electrolyte losses, because at the end of the day, unless I'm testing every milliliter of a sweat that you've lost, I don't know exactly the electrolytes that you've lost. And then also, we're trying to replace fluids by a certain factor. So let's say if an athlete lost 4 liters worth of sweat, then I'm replacing 4 times 2, let's say, as a factor of fluids to replace during a period of time. And then carbohydrates, we go with like a glycogen reload. 8 to 12 is kind of our range of grams per kilo per day of carbohydrates. And if you want, we'll go more in depth on how we kind of dose it and then how we're programming it through the day, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's dive into it. Let's go through. How do you guys get into that?
So what we deem is like the quote unquote critical rehydration period is basically 6 hours post weigh-in. So within that period of time, we're more conservative on carbohydrate intake. We'll go for starting off at 60 grams per hour and work our way up to 90 grams per hour, which tends to be quite tolerable for the gut. And then we also like to follow what we call FODMAPs, so low FODMAP, so low in fermentable oligosaccharides, things that tend to irritate the gut. Essentially, the fermentable oligosaccharides are carbohydrate sources that tend to ferment in the gut. The bacteria throw a little party at your expense, essentially. And we'd like to avoid those, especially when the gut is quite compromised from the heat exposure. A lot of athletes have irritable bowel issues, leaky gut, etc., from essentially 6 hours in sitting in a sauna.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, so we've gone through that process. What are you guys doing? Because you're feeding them fight day as well. If you've got the Saturday, you've got the whole Saturday and you guys are providing the service. What's the nutritional goals on that Saturday?
So nutritional goals for Saturday is to get you as much carbohydrate as you can get in without having you go into your fight bloated. It also depends on what time your fight is. How we might fuel someone who has to fight at 3 p.m. might be very different than someone who has to fuel at 10 p.m. We can squeeze in a whole extra meal there. But the premise is still the same. It's primarily carbohydrates, some protein, minimal fats is the general structure. Mario, of course, has been incredibly creative in taking that terminology and turning it into beet infused pancakes, all kinds of amazing dishes that we can both meet the cravings of the athlete, but also be strategic in the carbohydrate intake that they're getting in pre-fight.
Yeah, absolutely. Big shout out to Chef Mario, because the stuff I've seen that guy make and the food, even during that fight week phase, hey, it's like, it's incredible what he can do for food dishes that have very minimal carbohydrate, cannot have much salt, and you know, are restricted to the volume, and what he can do with the sauces and how he, you know, how he prepares the meat and the grains or the starches, whatever they can have, is absolutely phenomenal. So big shout out to Mario. Hey, Charles. I don't know the exact numbers about this, but obviously this program came in as a way to combat missing weight, because obviously missing weight isn't great from an athlete perspective. It's not great from a business perspective for the UFC. How has this program, have you guys collected data about this since you guys have come into action? How has this program helped with that outcome?
So first and foremost, I'll say that those who tend to interact with the UFC PI tend to be those that also have the most challenges. So regardless of that, I think Clint has the best numbers in terms of the update for the actual impact, but there has been a significant reduction in a number of weight misses since the UFC PI has come into fruition. And I can only imagine that it'll continue to get better as we get more and more buy-in and we work with more fighters, not only during fight week. Providing all these resources over fight week is almost like a like an incentive to be like, hey, this is what we can do in a week. Give us 8 weeks. Give us 52 weeks out of the year, aka the 52-week athlete, and we can really work to optimize your performance.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess last question, Charles, is, you've been in this program for the last 18 months. You've seen how much it's evolved from day zero to this time here. How do you see this program evolving in, say, the next 18 months? What do you see happening with it?
Honestly, I think we'll just continue to develop, at least on the food side. Trifecta, Mario has hired his second chef, actually. And I can only imagine that the quality and food, the creativity, the functionality is going to continue to grow. And on our front, I mean, we always say that we're here to evolve and here to learn. I can only imagine in the amount of changes in research and literature that's going to make the program even better. I mean, maybe we'll learn what metrics to track over fight week. There's a lot of sports science and data that we can certainly track over fight week, and including sleep quality. I've tickled this idea a couple of times, but perhaps having some kind of sleep quality tracker over a fight week would be incredibly helpful to let us know whether or not we need to intervene with some sleep support supplementation, et cetera. So I think the sports science and data and objective data collection is going to be the next big thing for us over fight week.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think just reiterating this point is that if anyone hasn't seen this service in action, it's incredible. And I think it's absolutely phenomenal what you guys do. Like I keep saying, like, I've got 8 weeks with my guys and we come in this, and then you guys pull this stuff off and you do it very well, very efficiently, very safe in a performance-based way. Over 5 days. And it is like, because of everything that you went through, your onboarding process, how diligent you guys are with your check-ins every single day. And it's, I've seen it. I've seen how manic you and Alexa and Clint and Mario are during this week, where you're running around, and it's phenomenal to see. And I think it's nothing but great for the sport, and it's going to improve the way that people make weight. It's going to improve the way that other practitioners go about making weight, how the athletes think about making weight. So it's nothing but a good thing. So Charles, I guess if people want to follow you, they want to get in contact with you, they want to keep up to date with what you're doing, what's the best way for them to do that?
So I'm actually pretty new to the world of social media and Instagram. But now that I have an Instagram, you can always reach out at The Angry Dietitian, and that's a good way to get in touch with me.
I've always wondered this. How did you get the name The Angry Dietitian? Because if anyone's met you, you're not very angry, and it makes me scared to maybe like step on the mats and train with you. Why do they call you The Angry Dietitian?
Just have that good switch.
Awesome. All right, Charles. Well, I appreciate you taking the time, mate. And no doubt we'll chat again soon.
Thank you so much, and look forward to seeing you soon.
And there it is, another episode of the Fight Science Podcast. Charles and the team at the UFCPI are revolutionizing the way we go about making weight. By taking a methodical, systematic, and scientifically driven approach, the UFCPI nutrition team are improving the culture and quality of the sport while also maintaining the athlete's health. Be sure to follow Charles on socials to stay up to date with his work. This podcast will be available through the podcast app, iTunes, Spotify, and you'll also be able to download it from my website, www.thefightdietitian.com/podcast. If you enjoy listening to the podcast, then be sure to head to the podcast app to give us a rating and leave us a review. Thanks for listening in, and I'll see you guys for the next episode of the Fight Science Podcast.